Hi, this is Mrs. English, and we are continuing in John Milton's Paradise Lost. We are now at Book 9. Book 9 in Milton's Paradise Lost, and I'll begin with his argument. Satan, having compassed the earth with meditated guile, returns as a mist by night into paradise, enters into the serpent sleeping. Adam and Eve in the morning go forth to their labors, which Eve proposes to divide in several places, each laboring apart. Adam consents not, alleging the danger lest that enemy, of whom they were forewarned, should attempt her found alone. Eve, loath to be thought not circumspect, or cautious, or firm enough, urges her going apart, the rather desirous to make trial or test of her strength. Adam at last yields. The serpent finds her alone, his subtle approach, first gazing, then speaking, with much flattery extolling Eve above all other creatures. Eve, wondering to hear the serpent speak, asks how he attained to human speech, and such understanding not till now. The serpent answers that by tasting of a certain tree in the garden, he attained both to speech and reason, till then void of both. Eve requires him to bring her to that tree, and finds it to be the tree of knowledge forbidden. The serpent, now grown bolder, with many wiles and arguments, induces her at length to eat. She, pleased with the taste, deliberates a while whether to impart thereof to Adam or not, at last brings him of the fruit, relates what persuaded her to eat thereof. Adam, at first amazed, but perceiving her lost, resolves through vehemence, which would be intensity, vehemence of love, to perish with her, and, extenuating the trespass, eats also of the fruit. The effects thereof in them both, they seek to cover their nakedness, then fall to variance and accusation of one another. And I'll begin here in Book 9, Line 1. No more of talk where God or angel guest, with man as with his friend, familiar used to sit indulgent, and with him partake rural repast, a country lunch, so no more will I tell you of angel visits. Permitting him the while venial, a trivial discourse unblamed, I now must change, line 5, and this is Milton speaking to us, I now must change these notes to tragic, foul distrust, and breach disloyal on the part of man. All right, so now we have had enough of that wonderful lunchtime rest and discussion with angels. I must get on to the tragic part. Revolt, line 3, and disobedience, on the part of heaven now alienated, distance and distaste, anger and just rebuke, and judgment given, line 10, that brought into this world a world of woe, sin and her shadow death, and misery, death's harbinger, harbinger's a herald, death's herald, sad task, yet argument not less but more heroic than the wrath of stern Achilles on his foe pursued, thrice fugitive about Troy's wall. So he is saying man's odyssey is going to be more heroic than that of Achilles, who chased, of course, Hector around the Trojan walls 3 times. It will also be more tragic than, we learn line 16, or rage of Turnus for Lavinia, disespoused. Okay, it will be more tragic than poor Turnus when he was no longer engaged to Lavinia. More tragic than what else? Line 17 or 18. Or Neptune's ire, or Juno's, that so long perplexed the Greek, and Cythera's son. Cythera is Venus, or Aphrodite. Her son is Aeneas. If answerable style, I can obtain of my celestial patroness. All right, if the muse will assist him. Who deigns, gives or grants, her nightly visitation unimplored. And so the muse gives him a nightly visitation unimplored. He doesn't ask. He doesn't implore. He just gets this. And dictates to me slumbering or inspires easy my unpremeditated verse. Since first this subject for heroic song pleased me long choosing and beginning late, Milton hath been planning this epic for a long time. Not sedulous, persistent, by nature to indite or compose wars, hitherto the only argument heroic deemed, okay, before now, the only argument that was worthy, deemed to be worthy of the heroic pattern of this epic was something that had to do with wars, and only before now. Chief mastery to dissect, and this is line 30, with long and tedious havoc, fabled knights in battles feigned, the better fortitude of patience and heroic martyrdom unsung, or to describe races and games, or tilting furniture. Tilting furniture is what you use to tilt with, which is jousting, so jousting equipment. Emblazoned shields, impresses quaint, caparisons and steeds. So this is all that has been written prior to what Milton is writing. Things about knights and fair maidens. Line 35, caparisons and steeds, vases and tinsel trappings, gorgeous knights and joust and tournaments, then marshaled feast, served up in hall with sewers, we would call that the steward today, or waiter, and sensicals, the skill of artifice or office mean, a low office, mean is low, not that which justly gives heroic name, line 40, to person or to poem, me of these nor skilled, nor skilled nor studious, higher argument remains, sufficient of itself to raise that name, unless an age too late, okay, unless, line 44, unless it's too late in our age of society to appreciate an epic, or cold climate, or years damp, my intended wing, line 45, or maybe I'm too old, not hers who brings it nightly to my ear. It won't be because of the muse who gives it to me every night. The sun was sunk. So here at line 48, we have a continuing now of the story. It's as though saying, now back to the story. The sun was sunk, and after him, the star of Hesperus, whose office is to bring twilight upon the earth, short arbiter, or judge, twixt day and night. And now from end to end, night's hemisphere had veiled the horizon round, when Satan, who late fled before the threats of Gabriel out of Eden, now improved in meditated fraud, all right, now Satan has learned more about planning his fraud, and malice, line 55, bent on man's destruction, maugre, regardless what might hap of heavier on himself, regardless of further punishment, fearless returned. So regardless of the consequences, Satan returns. By night he fled, and at midnight return from compassing the earth. This line 59, very reminiscent, my footnote gives Job 1:7. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comes thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. That sounds just like line 59. So he fled, he returned, by night he fled, and at midnight returned. Remember last time he came in the daytime, now he's coming at midnight. At midnight returned from compassing the earth, cautious of day, since Uriel, regent of the sun, descried, observed, line 60, his entrance and forewarned the cherubim that kept their watch, hence full of anguish driven, the space of 7 continued nights he rode with darkness, thrice the equinoctial line. So Satan is staying in the darkness. He's going around and around the earth 7 days by following the earth's orbit. He is staying out of the sun. He's having the earth stay between him and the sun. He's staying out of the light for these 7 days. Line 64. Thrice the equinoctial line he circled, 4 times crossed the car of night from pole to pole, transversing each color. And you have a footnote that tells you those are the circles that run perpendicular to the center of the earth's annual orbit around the sun. On the 8th returned, and on the coast of earth from entrance on cherubic watch, so he lands opposite of where the cherubs keep watch, by stealth found unsuspected way. There was a place, not now, though sin, not time, first wrought the change. Okay, there used to be a place. Line 70. where the Tigris, this is the river, at the foot of paradise into a gulf, shot underground till part rose up a fountain by the tree of life. Okay, so there used to be an underground spring of some type. In with the river sunk, and with it rose Satan, involved in rising mist, then sought where to lie, hid, line 76. Sea he had searched, and land from Eden over Pontus, that's the Black Sea, and the pool Maeotis, and now he's listing all types of rivers that he's going up and over, up beyond the river Ob, downward as far Antarctic, and in length west from Orontes to the ocean barred at Darien, line 81. Hence to the land where flows Ganges and Indus. Thus the orb he roamed with narrow search, and with inspection deep considered every creature, which of all most opportune might serve his wiles, and found, line 85, the serpent, subtlest beast of all the field. So Satan is going over through all of these rivers, and he's looking at all the creatures that there are, seeing which one would serve him best, and he's chosen the serpent in line 86. Him after long debate, irresolute of thoughts revolved, his final sentence chose fit vessel, fittest imp of fraud, in whom to enter, and his dark suggestions hide from sharpest sight. So Satan's going to enter this serpent. For in the wily snake, whether slights none would suspicious mark, and from his wit and native subtlety proceeding, which in other beasts observed, doubt might beget of diabolical power, line 95, active within beyond the sense of brute. Thus he resolved, but first from inward grief, his bursting passion into plaints, complaints thus poured. So first, before he does this, he's going to complain and whine, line 99, O earth, how like to heaven, if not preferred more justly, seat worthier of gods, as built with second thoughts, reforming what was old. Okay, the second might be better than the first. This earth might be better than heaven because it was God's second thought, so he has thought of even better things, reforming what was of old. For what God, after better worse, would build? Terrestrial heaven, danced round by other heavens that shine, yet bear their bright, officious, meddlesome lamps, okay, because Satan would not like light. Light above light, for thee alone, as seems in thee concentrating all their precious beams of sacred influence, as God in heaven is center, yet extends to all, so thou, he's talking about this earth, centering receivest from all those orbs, in thee, not in themselves, all their known virtue appears, productive in herb, plant, and nobler birth. Of creatures animate with gradual life, of growth, sense, reason, all summed up in man. With what delight could I have walked thee round? So Satan is here even wishing he had been created as a man. And if you recognized those lines above, 109 and 110, maybe that theory of the universe where Earth is at the center. Line 115. If I could joy in aught, in anything, sweet interchange of hill and valley, rivers, woods, and plains, now land, now sea, and shores with forest crowned, rocks, dens, and caves, but I in none of these find place or refuge, and the more I see pleasures about me, so much more I feel torment within me. Okay, the more happiness I see, the more miserable I am. Line 120. As from the hateful siege of contraries, all good to me becomes bane, and in heaven much worse would be my state. But neither here seek I, no, nor in heaven to dwell, unless by mastering heaven supreme, nor hope to be myself less miserable by what I seek. So unless I would have to defeat God to live happily in heaven. I'd have to master heaven's supreme, line 125. Nor hope to be myself less miserable by what I seek. Okay, he doesn't even hope to be less miserable by doing this. But others to make such as I. He just wants to make other people like him. Though thereby worse to me redound, even though that will make his reputation worse, for only in destroying I find ease to my relentless thoughts. And him destroyed, or won to what may work his utter loss, for whom all this was made, all this will soon follow, as to him linked in weal or woe. All right, it makes him feel better. Line 130, 129 and 130. Only in destroying he finds ease. This is another one of those sections of a soliloquy of Satan where it is very reminiscent of Shakespeare's play. And remember, Shakespeare lived only, he died only 50, 60 years ago prior to this being written. And in Shakespeare's first play, Titus Andronicus, there is a character, and I believe I told you it was Iago. I was lying. It was Aaron. His character Aaron in Titus Andronicus. I'll read that in class if I remember. That's from Act 5, Scene 1, and Aaron's speech begins at line 1 to 4. Titus Andronicus, scene, Act 5, Scene 1, and he begins with line 124. And this is one of his evil characters. And someone had just said to him, and of course I'm reading from Shakespeare now, "Art thou not sorry for these heinous deeds?" Okay, wicked deeds. And Aaron replies, "Aye, that I had not done 1,000 more. Even now I curse the day. And yet I think few come within the compass of my curse, wherein I did not some notorious ill, as kill a man, or else devise his death, ravish a maid, or plot the way to do it, accuse some innocent, and forswear myself, set deadly enmity between two friends, make poor men's cattle break their necks, set fire on barns and haystacks in the night, and bid the owners quench them with their tears. Oft have I digged up dead men from their graves, and set them upright at their dear friend's door, even when their sorrows almost was forgot, and on their skins, as on the bark of trees, have with my knife carved in Roman letters, let not your sorrow die, though I am dead. Tut, I've done 1,000 dreadful things as willingly as one would kill a fly, and nothing grieves me heartily indeed, but that I cannot do 10,000 more." That was from Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus, Act 5, Scene 1, beginning line 124, and going on through line 144. Fascinating. It does seem to me that it is possible that Milton has part of his inspiration for Satan here from some Shakespearean characters, and that would be especially Aaron from Titus Andronicus. And so, line 129 again, for back to Paradise Lost, "For only in destroying I find ease to my relentless thoughts." Okay, it makes me feel better. The only place I find comfort is to destroy other things. "And him destroyed, or won to what may work his utter loss," okay, if he can ruin man, "for whom all this was made. All this will soon follow, as to him linked in weal, happiness, or woe. In woe, then, that destruction wide may reign. To me shall be the glory sole among the infernal powers, in one day to have marred what he, Almighty, styled 6 nights and days continued making." Okay, I want to ruin in a day what it took God 6 days to make. "And who knows how long before had been contriving." Okay, who knows how long before God had been thinking of all that. "Though perhaps not longer than since I, in one night," line 140, "freed from servitude inglorious, well nigh half the angelic realm, and thinner left the throng of his adorers, he to be avenged, and to repair his numbers thus impaired, whether such virtue spent of old now failed, more angels to create, if they at least are his created, or to spite us more, determined to advance into our room, a creature formed of earth." That's line 149. So, maybe God created man to replace all the angels I stole from him. And when he says determined to advance, line 149, into our room, and that's 148, man's cramping us. "A creature formed of earth and him endow, exalted from so base original," line 150, "with heavenly spoils, our spoils, what he decreed he effected, man he made, and for him built magnificent this world, and earth his seat, him Lord pronounced, and oh, in dignity, subjected to his service angel wings, and flaming ministers to watch and tend their earthly charge. Of these the vigilance I dread, and to elude, thus wrapped in mist of midnight, vapor glide obscure, and pry in every bush and break, line 160, where perhaps may find the serpent sleeping." All right, so this is what he's looking for. looking for a serpent sleeping, in whose mazy folds to hide me, and the dark intent I bring, of foul descent, that I, who erst contended with gods to sit the highest, am now constrained into a beast and mixed with bestial slime. 165. So he says, O foul descent, O pity me, how am I come to this? I wanted to sit as a god, I, who erst contended with gods to sit the highest, I, who before was trying to be with gods in the highest. And here I am now constrained into a beast. Here I am, getting into a serpent, mixed with bestial slime. Line 165. This essence to incarnate and imbrute, that to the height of deity aspired. Okay, that I'm going to walk into this slimy snake, and I had aspired to the height of deity. But what will not ambition and revenge descend to? Okay, ambition and revenge will stop at nothing. Who aspires must down as low as high he soared, obnoxious first or last, to basest things, lowest things. Revenge as at first, though sweet, bitter ere long back on itself recoils. Let it, I reck not, I care not, so it light well aimed, since higher I fall short, on him who next provokes my envy, this new favorite of heaven, this man of clay, son of despite, who must the more to spite his maker raised from dust, spite then with spite is best repaid. So saying, through each thicket, dank or dry, like a black mist, low creeping, he held on, line 180, his midnight search, where soonest he might find the serpent. Him, fast sleeping, soon he found, in labyrinth of many a round, self-rolled, his head the mist, well stored with subtle wiles, not yet in horrid shade or dismal den, nor notient yet, okay, guilty, but on the grassy herb, fearless, unfeared, he slept. In at his mouth, the devil entered. So Satan enters through the serpent's mouth, and his brutal sense in heart or head, possessing, soon inspired with act intelligential, but his sleep, line 190, disturbed not, waiting close the approach of morn. Now, when as sacred light began to dawn in Eden, on the humid flowers that breathed their morning incense, when all things that breathe from the earth's great altar send up silent praise to the Creator, and his nostrils fill with grateful smell, forth came the human pair, and joined their vocal worship to the choir of creatures, wanting voice that lack voice. So Adam and Eve are up now, singing their morning praises to God. That done, line 199, partake the season, prime for sweetest scents and airs, then commune how that day they best may ply their growing work. Then they talk about how they can best to get their work done that day. For much their work outgrew the hands' dispatch of two gardening so wide. Okay, they have quite a garden for just the two pair of hands. And Eve, first to her husband, thus began. Line 205. So this is Eve. Adam, well may we labor still to dress, or tend, this garden, still to tend plant, herb, and flower, our pleasant task enjoined, but till more hands aid us, okay, till we have children, the work under our labor grows, luxurious by restraint. Okay, the less we do to it, the faster it grows, more luxurious by restraint. What we by day lop overgrown or prune or prop or bind, one night or two with wanton growth derides, tending to wild. Okay, the garden's taking over. Thou therefore now advise, or hear what to my mind first thoughts present. So she's going to give him a suggestion of what they should do different. Line 214. Let us divide our labors. Thou, where choice leads thee, or where needs most, okay, you go where you want to, or where it needs it most, whether to wind the woodbine round this arbor, or direct the clasping ivy where to climb, while I, I have to make sure I'm not skipping a page here, while I, in yonder spring of roses intermixed with myrtle, find what to redress, to fix or adjust, till noon, okay, while I go over here and work on the roses, just till noon, line 219. For a while, so near we other thus all day, our task we choose, okay, while we work near each other all day. What wonder if so near looks intervene and smiles, or object new casual discourse, casual conversation draw on, which intermits our day's work brought to little. Then we don't get any work done, we just talk. though begun early and the hour of supper comes unearned. And then it's time for dinner time and we haven't earned our dinner yet. Line 225. So even is saying, we distract one another when we work together, so let's work separate. And now Adam. To whom mild answer Adam thus returned, Soul, Eve, associate soul, to me beyond compare above all living creatures, dear. Well hast thou motioned, well thy thoughts employed, how we might best fulfill the work which here God hath assigned us, nor of me shall pass unpraised. For nothing lovelier can be found in woman than to study household good and good works in her husband to promote. Yet not so strictly hath our Lord imposed labor, line 235, as to debar or exclude us when we need refreshment, whether food or talk between, food of the mind, or this sweet intercourse of looks and smiles. For smiles from reason flow, to brute denied. Okay, animals don't have, they can't smile. So Adam is saying, it's really not such a bad thing, honey, that we get distracted and have this sweet intercourse, which is conversation, of looks and smiles, because this is how we reason things out. We don't have to just work. Line 241. It is denied to brutes, and are of love the food. Love not the lowest end of human life. Don't love just the basest things, just work. For not to irksome toil, but to delight he made us, and delight to reason joined. These paths and bowers, doubt not, but our joint hands will keep from wilderness with ease, as wide as we need walk, till younger hands ere long, okay, we'll keep up with the gardening enough till we have children to help, till younger hands ere long assist us. But if much converse, perhaps thee satiate is full, so maybe if too much talking, maybe if you've had enough talking, to short absence I could yield, for solitude sometimes is best society, and short retirement urges sweet return. If we're away, it makes us want to be together, and then it's sweeter, line 250. So he will not work apart for the sake of getting more done, but he would be willing to work apart if she is just talking, if she's tired of talking. But other doubt possesses me, lest harm befall thee severed from me, okay, unless something happens to you bad when you're away from me. For thou knowest what hath been warned us, what malicious foe, envying our happiness and of his own despairing, seeks to work us woe and shame by sly assault, and somewhere nigh at hand watches, no doubt, with greedy hope to find his wish and best advantage, us asunder, okay, to split us up, hopeless to circumvent us joined, where each to other speedy aid might lend at need. Line 260. Okay, you can count on it that evil one's watching us, trying to see if he can't split us up to work to his best advantage. And if we're together, to other speedy aid might lend at hand. If we're together, we could aid one another. That was line 260. Whether his first design be to withdraw our fealty from God, our loyalty, or to disturb conjugal love, our married love, than which perhaps no bliss enjoyed by us excites his envy more. And of course this is true. Adam says he'll look at us, at the bliss we have, the happiness we have, and this will make him even more envious. Or this, line 265, or worse, leave not the faithful side that gave thee being, still shapes thee and protects. The wife, where danger or dishonor lurks, safest and seemliest by her husband stays, who guards her, or with her the worst endures. It is better for you to stay with me. I can either guard you, or, you know, keep you from being dishonored, giving into temptation. Line 270. To whom the virgin majesty of Eve, as one who loves, and some unkindness meets, with sweet austere, which is a strict or hard face, austere composure, thus replied, Offspring of heaven and earth, and all earth's Lord, that such an enemy we have, who seeks our ruin, both by the informed I learn, and from the parting angel overheard, as in a shady nook I stood behind, just then returned at shut of even flowers. So Eve even heard the last bit that Raphael had to say to Adam. Apparently she overheard, so she was doing a little bit of eavesdropping here. But that thou shouldest my firmness therefore doubt to God or thee, because we have a foe may tempt it, I expected not to hear. Line 281. I didn't expect you to doubt my firmness to you or to God, just because we have an enemy. His violence thou fearest not, being such as we, not capable of death or pain, can either not receive or can repel. Line 285. His fraud is then thy fear, which plain infers thy equal fear that my firm faith and love can by his fraud be shaken or seduced. This proves you don't trust me. Thoughts, which how found they harbor in thy breast, Adam, misthought of her to thee so dear? How could you believe that of me that you say is so dear to you? Line 290. To whom with healing words Adam replied, Daughter of God and man, immortal Eve, for such thou art, from sin and blame entire. Not diffident of thee do I dissuade. I don't lack confidence in you, thy absence from my sight, but to avoid the attempt itself intended by our foe. Line 295. For he who tempts, though in vain, at least asperses, insinuates, the tempted with dishonor foul, supposed not incorruptible of faith, not proof against temptation. Thou thyself with scorn and anger wouldst resent the offered wrong. Hey, I know you would scorn and resent an offered wrong, a temptation. I know you wouldn't sin. That was line 300. Though ineffectual found, misdeem not then, if such affront I labor to avert from thee alone, which on us both at once, the enemy, though bold, will hardly dare. Okay, two are stronger than one. Or, daring, first on me the assault shall light. Line 305. If the enemy dared to assault us when we were together, of course he would assault me first. That was line 305. Subtle he needs must be who could seduce angels. Ooh, honey, he was able to seduce angels. He's bad. Nor think superfluous, extra, others aid. I from the influence of thy looks receive access in every virtue. In thy sight, more wise, more watchful, stronger, if need were, of outward strength. While shame, thou looking on, shame to be overcome or overreached, would utmost vigor raise. Okay, I would be so ashamed to fail in front of you that it would make me more vigorous to refuse. And raised unite. Why shouldest, in the line 315, why shouldest not thou like sense within thee feel when I'm present, and thy trial choose with me, best witness of thy virtue tried? So spake domestic Adam in his care and matrimonial love, but Eve, who thought less attributed to her faith sincere, thus her reply with accent sweet renewed. If this be our condition, thus to dwell in narrow circuits, straitened by a foe, subtle or violent, we not endued single with like defense, wherever met, how are we happy, still in fear of harm? How can we ever be happy if we live in constant fear? But harm precedes not sin, only our foe tempting affronts us with his foul esteem of our integrity. His foul esteem sticks no dishonor on our front, line 330, but turns foul on himself, then wherefore shunned or feared by us, who rather double honor gained from his surmise proved false, will receive double honor if he surmises he can make us sin and it proves to be false. Find peace within, favor from heaven, our witness from the event. And what is faith, love, virtue, unassayed, untested, alone, without exterior help, sustained? Okay, what is faith, love, or virtue, untested? Is it real? Line 335. Without help, exterior help sustained. Let us not then suspect our happy state, left so imperfect by the Maker wise, and not secure to single or combined. Frail is our happiness if this be so. If we can't stand alone, we'll never be happy. And Eden were no Eden thus exposed. To whom thus Adam fervently replied, O woman, best are all things as the will of God ordained them. I believe this is Adam exasperated. His creating hand nothing imperfect or deficient left. That's line 345. Of all that he created, much less man or aught, anything that might his happy state secure, secure from outward force. Within himself the danger lies, yet lies within his power. Against his will, line 350, Against his will he can receive no harm, but God left free the will. For what obeys reason is free, and reason he made right. But bid her well beware, and still erect, lest by some fair-appearing good surprise she dictate false, and misinform the will to do what God expressly hath forbid. All right, it's not that he doesn't trust her, but we are created with a free will. We could disobey. Nor then mistrust, but tender love enjoins. Okay, line 356. I don't mistrust you, I love you. That I should mind thee oft, and mind thou me. Firm we subsist, yet possible to swerve, since reason not impossibly may meet some specious object, some fair, tricky object, by the foe suborned, induced, and fall into deception unaware. We could be tricked, Eve. That was line 362. Not keeping strictest watched, as she was warned. Seek not temptation then, which to avoid, don't go looking for trouble, which to avoid were better, and most likely, if from me thou sever not, don't separate from me, trial will come unsought. We don't have to look for it. Wouldst thou approve thy constancy, approve first thy obedience. The other, who can know, not seeing the attempted, who attest? But if thou think, trial unsought may find us both securer than thus warned thou seemest. Go. I guess you better work alone if you feel that way. Go, line 372. For thy stay not free, absence thee more. Go in thy native innocence. Rely on what thou hast of virtue. Some and all, for God towards thee hath done his part. Do thine, line 375. So spake the patriarch of mankind, but Eve persisted, yet submiss, though last replied. With thy permission, then, and thus forewarned, chiefly by what thine own last reasoning words touched only, that our trial, when least sought, may find us both, perhaps, far less prepared, the willinger I go, nor much expect a foe so proud will seek the weaker seek, will first the weaker seek. So Eve does not think their foe will come to her first. So bent, the more shall shame him his repulse. Thus saying, from her husband's hand, her hand soft she withdrew. Line 385. And like a wood nymph light, Oread or Dryad, or of Delia's train. And this is a classical reference to Diana in 388. Diana, very interesting too. Diana was a pagan classical goddess. Very interesting to do in a comparison of Eve with Diana. And of course Diana was the goddess of the woods, who would hunt with nymphs and dryads going with her. So she's in a chariot or running on the ground and has a quiver of arrows on her back and is an archer and does not especially enjoy men. So that comparison may give us a little hint that because the goddess Diana spurned men and remained unmarried, that perhaps this comparison with Eve is telling us a little something of what Milton thinks about women. If you have not picked up on this yet, Milton clearly thinks that women are weaker not really in the biblical Genesis way. He also feels women are less intellectual. Very unusual, some of the comments that Milton makes about women. Back to line 385, about Delia's train. Betook her to the groves, but Delia's self in gait, that's your manner of walking, your gait, surpassed and goddess-like deport, the way she carried herself, though not as she with bow and arrow armed, line 390, but she didn't walk off armed with bow and arrow like the goddess Diana, but with such gardening tools as are yet rude, guiltless of fire had formed. All right, tools that had not been formed from a forge, forged with fire, or angels brought. To Pales or Pomona thus adorned, likest she seemed, Pomona when she fled Vertumnus, or to Ceres in her prime. Milton's comparing her with many goddesses, line 395. Yet virgin of Proserpina from Jove, her long with ardent look his eye pursued, delighted, but desiring more her stay. So Adam is watching her leave, but wishes she would stay. Line 399. Oft he to her his charge of quick return repeated. Eve, don't come back quick. She to him is oft engaged, line 400, to be returned by noon amid the bower. Don't worry, I'll meet you at noon at the Bower for lunch. And all things in best order to invite noontime repast, or afternoon's repose. Oh, much deceived, much failing, hapless Eve, of thy presumed return, event perverse, line 405, thou never from that hour in paradise foundest either sweet repast or sound repose, such ambush hid among sweet flowers and shades, waited with hellish rancor imminent to intercept thy way, line 410, or send thee back despoiled of innocence, of faith, of bliss, for now, and since first break of dawn, the fiend, mere serpent in appearance, forth was come, and on his quest, where likeliest he might find the only two of mankind, but in them, line 415, the whole included race, his purposed prey. Okay, he's looking for the only two that exist now, but his intent is to ruin the whole race. In bower and field he sought, where any tuft of grove or garden plot more pleasant lay, their tendance or plantation for delight. By fountain or by shady rivulet, line 420, he sought them both, but wished his hap might find Eve separate. He wished, but not with hope of what so seldom chanced, when to his wish, beyond his hope, Eve separate he spies, veiled in a cloud of fragrance where she stood, line 425. He believes it's too much to hope to find Eve the weaker alone, and then there she is. Line 426. Half spied, so thick the roses bushing round about her glowed, oft stooping to support each flower of slender stalk, whose head, though gay carnation, purple, azure, or speckled with gold, hung drooping unsustained. Them she upstays gently with a myrtle band, so she's tying up the flowers. Line 431. Mindless the while herself, though fairest unsupported flower. She's mindless of herself, although she is the fairest unsupported flower. Some flowers you have to support by tying them up to stakes. From her best prop so far, and storm so nigh, nearer he drew, and many a walk transversed of stateliest covert, cedar, pine, or palm, line 435, then voluble and bold, now hid, now seen among thick woven arborets and flowers embroidered on each bank, the hand of Eve. So he's going around, sometimes out in the open. You can imagine him running from place to place. Spot more delicious than those gardens feigned or imagined. Okay, he's going from spot to spot, and these spots are more delicious than those gardens feigned, line 439, which means imagined or imitated of revived Adonis, or renowned Alcinous, the host of old Laertes' son, that's Odysseus, or that, not mystic, where the sapient king held dalliance with his fair Egyptian spouse. Okay, it's not more beautiful than that place. The sapient king is Solomon and his Pharaoh's daughter. Much he the place admired, the person more. So line 444, Satan admires the garden, but he admires Eve more. The person more, as one who long in populous city pent, where houses thick and sewers annoy the air, just like somebody who's been pent up in a house and smells icky things, forth issuing on summer's morn to breathe among the pleasant villages and farms adjoined, so she's a breath of fresh air. From each thing met conceives delight, the smell of grain, or tedded grass, or kine, that's a cow, line 450, or dairy, each rural sight, each rural sound, if chance with nymph-like step fair virgin pass, what pleasing seemed, for her now pleases more, she most, and in her look sums all delight, so she is beautiful. Such pleasure took the serpent to behold, line 455, to behold this flowery plat, or plot of ground, the sweet recess of Eve thus early, thus alone, her heavenly form angelic, but more soft and feminine, her graceful innocence, her every air of gesture or least action overawed his malice. Her every motion, then, is overawing his malice, line 461, and with rapine sweet bereaved, okay, and with rapine is a very old word, and at this time means to spoil or ruin, and of course this is the source of our word rape, and with rapine sweet bereaved, And so his ideas of thought or ruin are actually bereaved. They leave him. His fierceness of the fierce intent it brought. That space, the evil one, abstracted, stood. Satan is literally stunned by her beauty. From his own evil, and for the time remained stupidly good. Line 465. Of enmity disarmed. He's completely disarmed. Of guile, of hate, of envy, of revenge. But the hot hell that always in him burns, though in mid-heaven, soon ended his delight, and tortures him now more, the more he sees of pleasure not for him ordained. So this beauty and goodness that he will never enjoy incites him to even more wickedness. Line 470. Then soon fierce hate he recollects, he remembers, and all his thoughts of mischief gratulating, he thus excites. So he thinks to himself, thoughts, whither have ye led me? With what sweet compulsion thus transported to forget what hither brought us? Hate, not love, nor hope of paradise for hell. Line 476. Hope here to taste of pleasure, but all pleasure to destroy. Save, accept, what is in destroying. Other joy to me is lost. This again is very reminiscent of Aaron in Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus. Save what is in destroying, that is his only pleasure. Other joy to me is lost. Then let me not let pass occasion which now smiles. I can't let this pass by. Line 480. Behold alone the woman, opportune to all attempts. Her husband, for I view far round, not nigh, he's not near, whose higher intellectual more I shun. He's a little smarter, okay? So I don't want to get, I'm not sure about approaching him. I see this as a Darwinian view of women, but it's before Darwin, a couple hundred years. Whose higher intellectual more I shun, and strength of courage, haughty, and of limb heroic built, though of terrestrial mold. Foe not informidable, exempt from wound, I not so much hath hell debased and pain enfeebled me, to what I was in heaven, she fair, divinely fair, fit love for gods, not terrible, though terror be in love and beauty, line 490, not approached by stronger hate. Hate stronger, under show of love well feigned, the way which to her ruin now I tend. Okay? Now on to ruining Eve. So spake the enemy of mankind, enclosed in serpent, inmate bad, and toward Eve addressed his way, not with indented wave, prone on the ground as since. Okay, he wasn't going back and forth on the ground like snakes do, undulating on the ground as since, like they do now, but on his rear. Circular base of rising folds that towered fold above fold, a surging maze, his head crested aloft, and carbuncle his eyes. All right, remember that Satan was cursed to be on his belly, so he's not on his belly now. Line 500. With burnished neck of verdant gold, erect amidst his circling spires, that on the grass floated redundant, pleasing was his shape and lovely, never since of serpent kind lovelier, not those that in Illyria changed Hermione and Cadmus, more classical allusions, or the god of Epidaurus, nor to which transformed Ammonian Jove, or Capitoline was seen, he with Olympias. And of course, this Olympias is the mother of Alexander the Great that worshipped a terrible classical goddess. And of course, she kept snakes. She kept snakes. And back to, let's see, Capitoline. He with Olympias, Alexander's mother, this with her who bore, that's line 5-9, Scipio, the height of Rome. With tract oblique at first, as one who sought access, but feared to interrupt, sidelong he works his way, as when a ship by skillful steersman wrought nigh river's mouth or foreland, where the wind veers oft, as oft so steers and shifts her sail, line 515. So varied he, and of his tortuous train curled many a wanton wreath in sight of Eve, to lure her eye. She busied, heard the sound of rustling leaves, but minded not, as used to such disport, before her through the field, from every beast, more duteous at her call than at Circean call, the herd disguised. And Circe, of course, is the one who, from the Odyssey, who cast the spell over men and changed them into different animals. Than at Circean call, the herd disguised. He bolder now, uncalled, before her stood. But as in gaze admiring, oft he bowed his turret crest. So Satan is going to play on Eve's vanity. He's bowing before her to flatter her. This is line 525. Oft he bowed his turret crest and sleek enameled neck, fawning, and licked the ground whereon she trod. His gentle, dumb expression turned at length the eye of Eve to mark his play. So she finally turns and looks at him. He, glad of her attention gained, with serpent tongue, organic, or impulse of vocal air, okay, organic in this context means instrumental, used as a tool, instrumental. With serpent tongue organic, or impulse of vocal air, line 530, his fraudulent temptation thus begun. And he speaks to her, wonder not, sovereign mistress, if perhaps thou canst, who art sole wonder, much less arm thy looks, the heaven of mildness, with disdain, displeased that I approach thee thus, and gaze insatiate, I thus single, nor have feared thy awful brow, more awful thus retired. Fairest resemblance of thy maker fair, thee all things living gaze on, all things thine by gift, and thy celestial beauty adore with ravishment beheld, there best beheld where universally admired, but here in this enclosure wild, these beasts among, beholders rude. Okay, oh, what a shame, all you have, the universe would admire you, what a shame, you have only these animals to admire you, and shallow to discern what half in thee is fair, a one man except who sees thee, and what is one, only one man ever gets to see you, who shouldst be seen a goddess among gods, adored and served by angels numberless thy daily train. So, he has flattered her, saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe you only have one man to adore you. You should be served. You should be like a goddess, adored, served by angels. So glozed the tempter, line 549, and his proem tuned into the heart of Eve. And a proem, of course, is the beginning of a, you would begin a long epic with a proem, or sometimes a poem with a proem. It's an introduction. And his proem tuned into the heart of Eve, his words made way. Though at the voice much marveling, she shocked. Okay, my goodness, an animal talking, okay, though at the voice much marveling, at length not unamazed, she thus in answer spake, what may this mean? Language of man pronounced by tongue of brute, and human sense expressed? The first at least of these, I thought, denied to beasts, whom God on their creation day created mute to all articulate sound. The latter I demur, for in their looks much reason, and in their actions oft appears. The serpent, subtlest beast of all the field, line 360, I knew, but not with human voice endued. Redouble then this miracle, and say, how camest thou speakable of mute? How can you speak? And how to me so friendly grown above the rest of brutal kind that daily are in sight? Line 565. Say, for such wonder claims attention due. Oh, tell me. To whom the guileful tempter thus replied, Empress of this fair world, resplendent Eve, easy to me it is to tell thee all what thou commandest, and right thou shouldest be obeyed. Line 570. I was at first as other beasts that graze the trodden herb of abject thoughts and low. Okay, I used to be just like those other stupid beasts. As was my food, nor aught, nor anything but food discerned or sex, or and apprehended nothing high. I didn't understand anything high. And I didn't understand male or female. till on a day, roving the field, line 575, I chanced a goodly tree, far distant to behold, loaden with fruit of fairest colors mixed, ruddy and gold. I drew nearer to gaze, when from the boughs a savory odor blown, oh my goodness, it smelled wonderful, grateful to appetite, more pleased my sense than smell of sweetest fennel. And fennel, I have a footnote that tells me that fennel aids snakes in shedding their skin and sharpens their eyesight. I have no idea what that is. Then smell of sweetest fennel, or the teats of ewe or goat dropping with milk at even, unsucked of lamb or kid that tend their play, to satisfy the sharp desire I had of tasting those fair apples, I resolved, line 585, not to defer. Hunger and thirst at once, powerful persuaders, quickened at the scent of that alluring fruit, urged me so can. About the mossy trunk I wound me soon, for high from ground the branches would require thy utmost, or atoms round the tree. All other beasts that saw with like desire, longing and envying stood, but could not reach. All the other animals wanted this fruit too, but could not reach it. So he's telling her, I was just like all the other stupid beasts, until I tasted from that goodly tree those apples, those fair apples, from line 585. And here we have Milton also perpetuating that myth that the fruit on the forbidden tree was an apple. And of course he's using this because classically in the Garden of the Hesperides, the magical fruit that was guarded, those were apples. And that's where Milton gets his idea. So all the other animals wanted them but could not reach them. And that was line 597. Amid the tree now got, where plenty hung, tempting so nigh to pluck and eat my fill, I spared not for such pleasure till that hour, at feed or fountain never had I found. Yum. Sated at length, when sated is like from the same root as satiate, it means full, sated at length, full at length, ere long I might perceive strange alteration in me. Okay, the fruit of the tree changed me. To degree of reason in my inward powers, and speech wanted not long, and it lacked not very long before I had speech, then I could speak. Line 601, though to this shape retained, a henceforth to speculations high or deep I turned my thoughts. Okay, now I started thinking deep thoughts, and with capacious mind, considered all things visible in heaven or earth or middle, all things fair and good, line 605, but all that fair and good in thy divine semblance, and in thy beauty heavenly ray united I beheld, no fair to thine equivalent or second. I've never seen anything, this is line 608, I've never seen anything as beautiful as you. As you, no fair to thine equivalent or second, which compelled me thus, though importune perhaps, to come and gaze, line 610, and worship thee of right declared sovereign of creatures, universal dame. He's come to gaze and to worship her, who he's decreeing right now as the most sovereign of creatures. So, here we have Satan again flattering Eve. So talked the spirited sly snake, and Eve, yet more amazed, unwary, she's very naive, thus replied, Serpent, and this is line 615, thy overpraising leaves in doubt the virtue of that fruit, in thee first proved. But say, where grows the tree? From hence how far? From here how far? For many are the trees of God that grow in paradise, and various, yet unknown to us, in such abundance lies our choice, as leaves a greater store of fruit untouched, still hanging, incorruptible, till men grow up to their provision, and more hands help to disburden nature of her birth. Okay, the fruit, just most of it hangs there untouched, because there's only Adam and I. And Satan replies to Eve, line 625, to whom the wily adder, and of course an adder is a poisonous snake, blithe and glad, Empress, The way is ready and not long. Beyond a row of myrtles on a flat fast by a fountain, one small thicket past of blowing myrrh and balm, if thou accept my conduct, I can bring thee hither soon. Line 630. If you accept me for your escort, I'll get you there real quick. Lead then, said Eve. He leading swiftly rolled in tangles and made intricate seem straight to mischief swift. Hope elevates and joy brightens his crest as when a wandering fire, compact of unctuous vapor, which the night condenses and the cold environs round, kindled through agitation to a flame, which oft, they say, some evil spirit attends, hovering and blazing with delusive light, misleads the amazed night wanderer from his way, line 640, to bogs and mires, and oft through pond or pool, there swallowed up and lost, from succor or help far. So glistered the dire snake. So that was a long Homeric simile. As he wanders around, it's just like a terrible vapor that leads, evil spirit leading some poor wanderer into a pond or pool where they're never seen again. So glistered the dire snake. And so glistered the dire snake. This is line 643. And into fraud led Eve, our credulous mother, to the tree of prohibition, root of all our woe. So Milton, as a narrator, is foreshadowing this fall to come. That was line 645. Which when she saw, thus to her guide she spake, Serpent, we might have spared our coming hither. Okay, we could have saved our trip. Fruitless to me, though fruit be here to excess, the credit of whose virtue rests with thee. If I'd known which tree you meant. Wondrous indeed, if cause of such effects, but of this tree we may not taste nor touch. God so commanded, and left that command, sole daughter of his voice. The rest we live law to ourselves. Our reason is our law. Okay, we can reason out and decide what to do with our own reason except for touching that tree. Line 655. To whom the tempter guilefully, which means lyingly, guilefully, deceitfully, replied, Indeed, hath God then said that of the fruit of all these garden trees ye shall not eat, yet lords declared of all in earth or air? To whom thus Eve, yet sinless, Of the fruit of each tree in the garden we may eat, line 660, but of the fruit of this tree, a fair tree amidst the garden, Goth had said, Ye shall not eat thereof, nor shall ye touch it, lest ye die. She scarce had said, though brief, when now more bold the tempter, but with show of zeal and love, line 665, that to man, and indignation at his wrong, new parts put on, and as to passion moved, fluctuates disturbed, yet comely, and in act raised, as, and here's another Homeric simile, as of some great matter to begin, as when of old some orator, some speaker, renowned in Athens or free Rome, where eloquence flourished, since mute, okay, since then it's been mute, to some great cause addressed, stood in himself collected, while each part, motion, each act one audience, ere the tongue. Okay, now, sometimes in height began, as no delay of preface brooking through his zeal of right, so standing, moving, or to height upgrown, the tempter all impassioned thus began. So Satan, just like an old Roman or Greek orator, some famous person who's going to get up and speak, that have since gone mute, there aren't any more of them anymore, that's just what he did. And by each act of this movement, he wins audience, line 674, which means he's almost mesmerizing Eve. And he begins, line 679. O sacred, wise, and wisdom-giving plant, mother of science, now I feel thy power within me clear, not only to discern things in their causes, but to trace the ways of highest agents, deemed however wise, queen of this universe. Do not believe those rigid threats of death. Ye shall not die. This is a good time to get back and look at Genesis. There are only a few lines there. Line 685. Ye shall not die. How should ye? By the fruit? It gives you life to knowledge. By the threatener? Okay, that's an epithet for God. Look on me. Okay, didn't kill me. Me, who have touched and tasted, yet both live, and life more perfect have attained than fate meant me, by venturing higher than my lot, okay, line 690, shall that be shut to man which to the beast is open? Do you really think you shouldn't have what a beast can have? Or will God incense his ire for such a petty trespass, and not praise rather your dauntless virtue, whom the pain of death denounced, whatever thing death be, whatever death is, line 695, deterred not from achieving what might lead to happier life, knowledge of good and evil. Of good, how just? Of evil, if what is evil be real, why not known, since easier shunned? So Satan is leading Eve astray. Basically, this is an old-fashioned example of values clarification, one step at a time, okay? You know, why can't you? If an animal can have it, why can't you have it? Do you really think God will be madder for such a little trespass? Won't he? He'll praise you for being virtuous. Whatever, death, and he will not, he won't denounce you. He won't die, whatever death is. Very interesting. Line 700. God, therefore, cannot hurt ye and be just. Not just, not God. Okay, God can't hurt you or he wouldn't be just. Not just, not God. And if he's not just, he's not God. Not feared then, nor obeyed. Your fear itself of death removes the fear. Why then was this forbid? Why but to awe? Why but to keep you, ye, low and ignorant, his worshippers? He knows, line 705, he knows that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes that seem so clear, yet are but dim, shall perfectly be then opened and cleared, and ye shall be as gods, knowing both good and evil as they know. That ye should be as gods, since I, as man, internal man, is but proportion meet. Line 711. I of brute human, ye of human gods. So ye shall die, perhaps, by putting off human to put on gods. Okay, maybe you'll die to being a human, because you'll become a god. A death to be wished, though threatened, which no worse than this can bring. Line 715. So maybe that's all you'll die. You'll just die to being a human and become a god. And what are gods that man may not become as they, participating godlike food? The gods are first, and that advantage use on our belief, that all from them proceeds. I question it, for this fair earth I see, line 720, warmed by the sun, producing every kind, them nothing. If they all things who enclosed knowledge of good and evil in this tree, that whoso eats thereof, forthwith attains wisdom without their leave, and wherein lies the offense that man should thus attain to know? What can your knowledge hurt him, or this tree impart against his will, if all be his? Or is it envy? And can envy dwell in heavenly breasts? Line 730. These, and many more causes import your need of this fair fruit. A goddess humane, reach then, and freely taste. He ended, and his words, replete with guile, into her heart, too easy entrance won. All right. How will Eve be tempted? We begin again with line 735. Fixed on the fruit she gazed. She's staring at the fruit, which to behold might tempt alone. Okay? To behold, to look at, is tempting enough. And in her ears the sound yet rung of her persuasive words. Okay? So she's tempted by sight and by sound. His persuasive words, impregned with reason, full of reason, to her seeming and with truth. So she's tempted by sight, sound, and false reasoning. Meanwhile, line 739, the hour of noon drew on, and waked an eager appetite. Oh, it's almost lunchtime. Raised by the smell so savory of that fruit, which with desire inclinable, now grown to touch or taste, solicited her longing eye, yet first pausing a while, thus to herself she mused. Line 745. Great are thy virtues, doubtless, best of fruits, though kept from man, and worthy to be admired, whose taste, too long forborne, at first assay gave elocution to the mute. Okay, the first taste, it allowed somebody who was mute to be able to speak, and taught the tongue not made for speech to speak thy praise. Thy praise he also who forbids thy use conceals not from us, naming thee the tree of knowledge, knowledge both of good and evil. So this is Eve's soliloquy, and she's rationalizing. Knowledge both of good and evil forbids us then to taste, but his forbidding commends thee more, while it infers the good by thee communicated, and our want, our lack, line 755. For good unknown, since is not had, or had and yet unknown, is as not had at all. In plain, then, what forbids he but to know? Forbids us good, forbids us to be wise. Such prohibitions bind not, line 760. But if death binds us with after bands, what profits then our inward freedom? In the day we eat of this fair fruit, our doom is we shall die. How dies the serpent? Okay, he didn't die. He hath eaten and lives and knows and speaks and reasons and discerns. Irrational till then. For us alone was death invented? Or to us denied this intellectual food for beasts reserved? For beasts it seems, yet that one beast which first hath tasted envies not, but brings with joy, line 770, but brings with joy the good befallen on him, author unsuspect, friendly to man, far from deceit or guile. Okay, it made this beast very friendly, and it made him, he's not deceitful. What fear I then? Rather, what know to fear under this ignorance of good and evil? How can I know what to fear if I don't know good from evil? Of God or death, of law or penalty, line 775. Here grows the cure of all, this fruit divine, fair to the eye, inviting to the taste, of virtue to make wise. What hinders then to reach and feed at once both body and mind? Okay, why shouldn't I just feed my body, eat it, enjoy it, and my mind? So saying, line 780, so saying, her rash hand in evil hour, forth reaching to the fruit, she plucked, she ate. Earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat, sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe that all was lost. I'd like to read you from one of the essays in the back of my edition. In my edition, it's on page 464. And this particular essay is, we'll see if I can see who this is written by, is by Scott Elledge. The last name is Elledge. And in this essay, it's called Important Concepts and Topics in Paradise Lost. And he addresses first the universe and talks about that golden chain that is fastened to heaven's floor. And then he talks about the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, and the fifth element that was the ether of the upper world. Then he talks about some of the psychology of that late Middle Ages where Milton is. He really is on the threshold of modernity with the four humors, that if you have too much of any one humor, you can be either cranky or ill, something like that. And he talks about the effect of the fall on all of creation. We just read in our text, earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat, sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe that all was lost. One way, and I'm reading from Scott Elledge's essay, one way to describe the fall and its consequences is to call them a distempering and a disturbance of the perfect balance in the mixture of elements and forces in all aspects of the world which God created perfect. So when nature sighed through all her works at the time of the fall, this would be the time that now we would begin getting storms in heaven, because nature is now in unbalanced. Nature has been perfectly balanced. Everything has been perfect. Adam and Eve have been perfect. But at the fall, not only do Adam and Eve feel the effects of the sin and of the fall, but nature also suffers. So people will start getting stomach aches, and the earth around us, the universe, will start to experience storms, earthquakes, extremes of heat and cold, and of course for Adam and Eve, all imperfections, which could be headaches, all types of different things. These are all the things that are now going to start plaguing mankind and the world. And that's why here in line 782, Milton says, "Earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat, sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe, that all was lost. Back to the thicket slunk the guilty serpent." All right, he's done. He leaves. "And well might, for Eve," line 785, "intent now wholly on her taste, naught else regarded." Eve doesn't even notice he leaves. "Such delight till then as seemed in fruit she never tasted, whether true or fancied so, through expectation high of knowledge, nor was Godhead from her thought." 790. "Greedily she engorged without restraint, and knew not eating death. Satiate, full at length, and heightened as with wine, jocund and boon." Okay, Eve is high on the fruit. "Thus to herself she pleasingly began." Line 795. "O sovereign, virtuous, precious of all trees in paradise, of operation blessed to sapience, hitherto obscured, infamed, and thy fair fruit let hang, as to no end created, but henceforth my early care, not without song, each morning and due praise shall tend thee." Line 800. "And the fertile burden ease of thy full branches offered free to all, till dieted by thee I grow mature in knowledge as the gods who all things know." Now, what's happening to Eve now that she has sinned? What is she aspiring to? She's going to eat from this tree, she says, until she grows mature in knowledge, line 804, as the gods who all things know. Do you remember what was the sin of Satan? What was his aspiration? To be like God. So this is, for the audience to read this, this is the realization that Eve now is aspiring for the same thing that Satan was aspiring. "Till knowledge as the gods who all things know, though others envy what they cannot give," line 805, "for had the gift been theirs, it had not here thus grown. Experience next to thee I owe, best guide. Not following thee, I had remained in ignorance. Thou openest wisdom's way." So Eve is extolling the wonderfulness of experience. Remember Milton's time. This is 1676, something like that, that Milton is writing this. I'd have to take a look. And we are on the threshold of the age of reasoning. Just on the threshold of the age of reasoning. There are many of these, many of the words, especially the word reason throughout this text, especially in this chapter. And experience. Is it best to be experienced or to be naive? And Milton here, with his Eve who has now sinned, is saying experience next to the I.O., best guide. She's glad she has this experience. She's glad she followed experience, because otherwise she would have remained in ignorance. Line 810. "Thou openest wisdom's way and givest access, though secret she retire. And I perhaps am secret. Heaven is high, high and remote to see from hence distinct each thing on earth." Okay, heaven's way up there. Maybe God won't notice. "And other care perhaps may have diverted from continual watch our great forbidder." All right, now what has happened? That's line 815. And what has happened with Eve? This is extremely important. These lines, going back to 782, with Earth felt the wound, everything has changed. And now line 814, 815. "Not only is she hoping that perhaps God isn't looking, and also," she says, "maybe from another care perhaps may have diverted from continual watch our great forbidder." Maybe God's busy doing something else, and she's no longer calling God anything that is positive. She now refers to him as our great forbidder, safe with all his spies about him. "But to Adam in what sort shall I appear? Shall I to him make known as yet my change and give him to partake full happiness with me? Or rather not, but keep the odds of knowledge in my power without co-partner? So to add what wants in female sex, the more to draw his love, and render me more equal, and perhaps a thing not undesirable, sometimes superior, for inferior who is free? So she's saying, shall I share with Adam or not? Maybe I could be the superior creature. Line 825. This may be well, but what if God have seen and death ensue? Then I shall be no more, and Adam wedded to another Eve shall live with her enjoying, I extinct, a death to think. That's death just to think about. Confirmed then, line 830, I resolve Adam shall share with me in bliss or woe. So dear I love him that with him all deaths I could endure. Without him live no life. So if I die, he has to die. So saying, from the tree her step she turned, but first low reverence done as to the power that dwelt within. So she is bowing to the tree, line 835, whose presence had infused into the plant sciential sap, derived from nectar, drink of God. Sciential is, I have a footnote that says it's knowledge-producing. Knowledge-producing sap, derived from nectar, drink of the gods. Adam, the while, waiting desirous her return, had wove of choicest flowers a garland to adorn her tresses. So what is Adam doing in line 840 while he waits for Eve to arrive for lunch at their bower? He is making her a garland of flowers. And her rural labors crown, as reapers oft are wont their harvest queen. Great joy he promised to his thoughts, and new solace in her return. Okay, he misses her, so long delayed. Yet oft his heart, line 845, divine of something ill, misgave him. He the faltering measure felt. Adam is uneasy. The faltering measure. Okay, earth felt the wound. He the faltering measure felt, and forth to meet her went, the way she took that morn when first they parted. So he's retracing the steps. By the tree of knowledge he must pass. There he her met, scarce from the tree returning, line 850, in her hand a bough of fairest fruit that downy smiled, new gathered and ambrosial smell diffused. Nectar and ambrosia was the food of the gods in classical antiquity. Humans couldn't have it. So for this to have an ambrosial smell is a heavenly smell. To him she hasted. In her face excuse came prologue. Her excuse came first, prologue came before, and apology to prompt, which with bland words at will she thus addressed, line 855. So this is Eve. Hast thou not wondered, Adam, at my stay? Didn't you wonder where I was gone so long? Thee I have missed and thought it, long deprived thy presence, agony of love till now not felt, nor shall be twice, for never more mean I to try what rash untried I sought, the pain of absence from thy sight. Okay, I'm going to never get out of your sight again. But strange hath been the cause, and wonderful to hear. This tree is not, as we are told, a tree of danger tasted, nor to evil unknown opening the way, but of divine effect, line 865, to open eyes, and make them gods who taste, and hath been tasted such. The serpent wise, or not restrained as we, or not obeying, hath eaten of the fruit, and is become not dead as we are threatened, line 870, but henceforth endued with human voice and human sense, reasoning to admiration, and with me persuasively hath so prevailed that I have also tasted, and have also found the effects to correspond. Open her my eyes, line 875. Dim erst, they were dim before, dilated spirits, ampler heart, I have a bigger heart, and growing up to Godhead, which for thee chiefly I sought. I did it for you, Adam. Without thee can despise, for bliss as thou hast part, to me is bliss, tedious, unshared with thee, and odious soon. Thou therefore also taste. Okay, eat now. Line 881. That equal lot may join us, equal joy as equal love. Equal now, eat now, so we'll be the same. Lest not thou not tasting, different degree disjoin us. Remember, this is that great chain of being, when everything has a different degree. And she's saying, I've eaten it now, my eyes are open, you better taste it. Differing degree disjoin us, and I then too late renounce deity for thee, when fate will not permit. Line 885, better do it now while you can. Thus Eve with countenance blith her story told, but in her cheek distemper, flushing glowed, so she blushes as though she's intoxicated. On the other side, Adam, soon as he heard the fatal trespass done by Eve, amazed, astonished, stood and blank, while horror chill ran through his veins, and all his joints relaxed. From his slack hand, the garland wreathed for Eve down dropped. He drops the wreath he made for her, and all the faded roses shed. Speechless he stood, and pale, till thus at length, first to himself, he inward silence broke. Line 896. O fairest of creation, last and best of all God's work, creature in whom excelled whatever can to sight or thought be formed, holy, divine, good, amiable, or sweet, how art thou lost? How on a sudden lost? Line 900. Defaced, deflowered, and now to death devote? Rather, how hast thou yielded to transgress the strict forbiddance? How to violate the sacred fruit forbidden? How could you do it? Some cursed fraud of enemy hath beguiled thee. Some enemy has tricked you, yet unknown, line 905, and me with thee hath ruined, for with thee certain my resolution is to die. How can I live without thee? How forego thy sweet converse and love so dearly joined, to live again in these wild woods forlorn, line 910. Should God create another Eve, and I another rib afford, yet loss of thee would never from my heart. No, I feel the link of nature draw me, flesh of flesh, bone of my bone thou art, line 915, and from thy state mine never shall be parted, bliss or woe. So having said, as one from sad dismay recomforted, and after thoughts disturbed, submitting to what seemed remediless, thus in calm mood his words to Eve he turned, line 920. Bold deed thou hast presumed, adventurous Eve, and peril great provoked, who thus hast dared, had it been only coveting to eye that sacred fruit, sacred to abstinence, much more to taste it under ban of touch, line 925. But past, who can recall? Or done, undo? Okay, you can't undo what you've done. Not God omnipotent, nor fate. Yet so perhaps thou shalt not die. Perhaps the fact is not so heinous now, foretasted fruit. Foretasted fruit. So the serpent tasted it before you. Maybe you won't die since the serpent ate it first. Profaned first by the serpent, line 930, by him first made common and unhallowed ere our taste, nor yet on him found deadly, yet he lives as thou saidst, and gains to live as man higher degree of life, inducement strong to us, as likely tasting to attain proportional ascent. Okay, it's just as likely, line 935, if it brought the serpent up in degree, it's likely to proportionately make us go up, which cannot be but to be gods, or angels, demigods. Nor can I think that God, creator wise, though threatening, will in earnest so destroy us, his prime creatures. Surely God won't destroy us. We're his best creatures. Line 940. Dignified so high, set over all his works, which in our fall for us created, needs with us must fall, dependent made. So God shall uncreate, be frustrate, do, undo, and labor lose, not well conceived of God, who, though his power creation could repeat, yet would be loath us to abolish. Okay, surely God wouldn't destroy everything that he has made, lest the adversary triumph and say, fickle their state, whom God most favors, who can please him long. Me first he ruined, now mankind, whom will he next? Line 950. Matter of scorn, not to be given the foe. However, I with thee have fixed my lot, certain to undergo like doom. If death consort with thee, death is to me as life. So forcible within my heart I feel the bond of nature draw me to my own in thee. For what thou art is mine. Our state cannot be severed. We are one, one flesh. To lose thee were to lose myself. Line 959. So Adam, and thus Eve to him replied, O glorious trial of exceeding love, illustrious evidence, example high, engaging me to emulate, but short of thy perfection, how shall I attain, Adam, from whose dear side I boast me sprung? Okay, I'm bragging I've sprung from your side, line 965. And gladly of our union hear thee speak, one heart, one soul in both, whereof good proof this day affords, declaring thee resolved, rather than death or aught than death more dread shall separate us, linked in love so dear, line 970, to undergo with me one guilt, one crime, if any be, of tasting this fair fruit, whose virtue, for of good still good proceeds, direct, or by occasion hath presented this happy trial of thy love, which else so eminently never had been known. Oh, I never would have known how much you loved me if we hadn't have had this trial, this test. Line 977. Were it I thought death menaced would ensue this my attempt, I would sustain alone the worst. If I thought I would die, I'd just handle it myself, and not persuade thee, rather die deserted than oblige thee with a fact pernicious to thy peace, chiefly assured remarkably, so late of thy so true, so faithful love unequalled. But I feel far otherwise the event, not death, but life augmented, opened eyes, new hopes, new joys, line 985. Taste so divine that what of sweet before hath touched my sense, flat seems to this and harsh. Anything else I've ever tasted, Adam, is flat and harsh compared to this. Of my experience, Adam, freely taste, and fear of death deliver to the winds. Line 990. So saying, she embraced him, and for joy tenderly wept, much won that he his love had so ennobled, as of choice to incur divine displeasure for her sake or death, in recompense, for such compliance bad, such recompense best merits, from the bough she gave him of that fair enticing fruit, with liberal hand. He scrupled not to eat against his better knowledge, not deceived, but fondly overcome with female charm. Earth trembled from her entrails, as again in pains, and nature gave a second groan. All right, that's line 1001. Earth trembles again when Adam sins. Nature gave a second groan. Sky lowered and muttering thunder. Some sad drops wept at completing of the mortal sin original. While Adam took no thought, eating his fill, nor Eve to iterate her former trespass feared. She didn't fear to reiterate, to retell. Line 1005. The more to soothe him with her loved society, that now as with new wine intoxicated, both they swim in mirth. Okay, they're happy. And fancy that they feel divinity within them breeding wings. So in line 1010, they fancy that they feel divinity within them breeding wings. They're becoming gods. Wherewith to scorn the earth, but that false fruit, far other operation first displayed, carnal desire inflaming. He on Eve began to cast lascivious eyes. That's the King James age word for lust. So they are now are lusting one another. She him as wantonly repaid, in lust they burn, till Adam thus gan Eve to dalliance move. Eve, now I see thou art exact of taste and elegance, of sapience, full of knowledge, no small part, since to each meaning savor we apply, and palate call judicious. I the praise yield thee, line 1020. So well this day thou hast purveyed, much pleasure we have lost while we abstained from this delightful fruit, nor known till now true relish tasting. If such pleasure be in things to us forbidden, it might be wished, for this one tree had been forbidden 10. Okay, if it was going to be this good, line 1025, it's too bad there weren't 10 of them. But come, so well refreshed, now let us play, as meat is after such delicious fare, for never did thy beauty since the day I saw thee first and wedded thee, adorned with all perfections, so inflame my sense with ardor to enjoy thee, fairer now than ever, bounty of this virtuous tree. So said he, and forbore not glance or toy of amorous intent. So he's, I suppose they're winking at each other. Line 1035. Well understood of Eve, whose eye darted contagious fire, her hand he seized, and to a shady bank, thick overhead with verdant roof embowered, he led her nothing loath. Flowers were the couch, pansies and violets and asphodel, and these are, of course, are the things that are supposed to, this is a classical reference, the asphodel is a flower that supposedly never never lost its color or anything, stayed beautiful. And that's why it's one of the, when you go down to the underworld in the classical age, everyone would go through the fields of asphodel, where there are these flowers, and you go down and become a shade. That was line 1040. And hyacinth, earth's freshest, softest lap. There they their fill of love and love's disport took largely, of their mutual guilt the seal, the solace of their sin, till dewy sleep oppressed them, wearied with their amorous play. Line 1045. Soon as the force of that fallacious fruit, that with exhilarating vapor bland about their spirits had played, and inmost powers made air was now exhaled, and grosser sleep bred of unkindly fumes, with conscious dreams encumbered, that was line 1050, now had left them, up they rose as from unrest, and each the other viewing, soon found their eyes how opened, and their minds how darkened. Innocence, that as a veil had shadowed them from knowing ill, was gone. Just confidence and native righteousness and honor from about them, naked, left to guilty shame. He covered, they realize they are naked, but his robe uncovered more. So rose the day night, strong Herculean Samson from the harlot lap of Philistine Delilah. So this is very much as when Milton is comparing this to when Samson left the harlot Delilah and waked up shorn of his strength. Line 1063, which of his hair, when Delilah shorn him of his hair, they destitute and bare of all their virtue, silent, and in face confounded long they sat, as struck and mute, till Adam, though not less than Eve abashed, line 1065, at length gave utterance to these words constrained. O Eve, in evil hour thou didst give ear to that false worm, of whomsoever taught to counterfeit man's voice, true in our fall, false in our promised rising. Since our eyes opened we find indeed, and find we know both good and evil, good lost and evil got, bad fruit of knowledge. If this be to know, which leaves us naked thus, of honor void, of innocence, of faith, of purity, our wanted ornaments now soiled and stained, and in our faces evident the signs of foul concupiscence, which is a strong or unnatural desire or lust. This is line 1078. And this might be time for a good mini excursion into the world of a Puritan or of Milton. Milton is not trying to tell us here in Book 9 that Adam and Eve never enjoyed the act of marriage before the sin, because they had their little bower. We are to accept that after the fall, their relationship with one another, as far as the act of marriage, is now ruined, so to speak. It's different. It has lost its innocence, and it has now changed to an unnatural desire or to a lust. This is line 1078. Whence evil store, even shame, the last of evils, of the first be sure then, how shall I behold the face henceforth of God or angel? How can I face God? Erst with joy, before I used to meet him with joy, and rapture so oft beheld, those heavenly shapes will dazzle now this earthly, with their blaze insufferably bright. Oh, might I here in solitude live savage, in some glade obscured where highest woods impenetrable to star or sunlight spread their umbrage broad and brown as evening. So he wishes he could hide forever. Cover me, ye pines, ye cedars, ye with innumerable boughs, hide me, where I may never see them more. Line 1090. But let us now, as in bad plight, devise what best may, for the present, serve to hide the parts of each from another. What can we use to cover ourselves with? That seem most to shame obnoxious and unseemliest seen. Now they realize they are ashamed that they are naked. Some tree, line 1095, some tree whose broad smooth leaves, sewn together and girded on our loins, may cover round those middle parts, that this newcomer, shame, there sit not and reproach us as unclean. So counseled he, and both together went into the thickest wood. There soon they chose the fig tree, not that kind for fruit renowned, but such as to this day, to Indians known in Malabar and Deccan, spreads her arms branching so broad and long, that in the ground the binded twigs take root, and daughters, line 1105, and daughters grow about the mother tree, a pillared shade high overarched and echoing walks between. Thereoft the Indian herdsman, shunning heat, shelters in cool. Okay, because it's this kind of a tree, not the kind that has the fruit, but the kind that has big leaves for offering shade. Shelters in cool, and tends his pasturing herds at loopholes cut through thickest shade. Those leaves they gathered, broad as Amazonian targe, and with what skill they had, together sewed to gird their waist, vain covering if to hide their guilt and dreaded shame. Oh, how unlike to that first naked glory! Such of late Columbus found the Americans so girt with feathered tincture. So Milton here, line 1116, is mentioning the natives that Columbus found. Because remember, this is the late 1600s, and Columbus came to America 1492. And so he says, just lately, it was just like that. How unlike their first naked glory. And that's how Columbus found the American, line 1116, so girt with feathered tincture, naked else and wild among the trees on isles and woody shores, thus fenced, and as they thought, their shame in part covered, but not at rest or ease of mind. They sat them down to weep, nor only tears rained at their eyes. Hey, it's not only tears, but high winds worse within began to rise, high passions, anger, hate, mistrust, suspicion, discord, and shook sore their inward state of mind. All right. Calm region once, line 1125, and full of peace, now tossed and turbulent. For understanding ruled not, and the will heard not her lore, both in subjection now to sensual appetite. All right, now their reason and their wills are subject to the sensual. Who from beneath, usurping over sovereign reason, claimed superior sway? Thus from distempered breast, Adam, estranged in look and altered style, speech intermitted, thus to Eve renewed. Line 1134. Wouldst thou had hearkened to my words and stayed with me as I besought thee? Only I wish you would have listened to me and stayed with me. As I besought thee, when that strange desire of wandering this happy morn, I know not whence possessed thee. Okay, I can't believe, I don't know what possessed you to think you had to go wander around. We had then remained still happy, not as now, despoiled of all our good, shamed, naked, miserable. So he's blaming Eve. Line 1140. Let none henceforth seek needless cause to approve the faith they owe. When earnestly they seek such proof, conclude, they then begin to fail. To whom such moved with touch of blame, thus Eve, what words have passed thy lips, Adam, severe? Imputest thou that to my default, or will of wandering, as thou callest it, which who knows but might as ill have happened thou being by? Can't believe you're blaming me. It could have happened with if you were right there. Or to thyself, perhaps, hadst thou been there, or hear the attempt, thou couldst not have discerned fraud in the serpent, speaking as he spake. Line 1150. You would have done the same. No ground of enmity between us known, why he should mean me ill or seek to harm. Was I to have never parted from thy side? As good have grown there still a lifeless rib. Being as I am, why didst thou, not thou the head, command me absolutely not go? Okay, this is the ultimate blame. 1155. You should have made me stay. Going into such danger as thou saidst, too facile then thou didst not much gainsay, nay, didst permit, approve, and fair dismiss. Hadst thou been firm and fixed in thy descent, neither had I transgressed, nor thou with me. Line 1161. To whom then first incensed? Now Adam has anger. Adam replied, is this the love, is this the recompense of mine to thee in grateful Eve, expressed immutable when thou wert lost? Not I, who might have lived and enjoyed immortal bliss, yet willingly chose rather death with thee. Am I now upbraided as the cause of thy transgressing? You're blaming me. Not enough severe, it seems, in thy restraint. What could I more? 1170. I warned thee, I admonished thee, foretold the danger, and the lurking enemy that lay in wait. Beyond this had been force, and force upon free will hath here no place. Okay? If I had done beyond that, it would have been force. And when you put force on free will, it doesn't have a place here. No one to be made you do it, Eve. Line 1175. But confidence then bore thee on, secure either to meet nor danger, no danger, or to find matter of glorious trial. And perhaps I also erred in overmuch admiring what seemed in thee so perfect, that I thought no evil durst tempt thee. Okay, so Adam says, my fault was in trusting you. But I rue that error now, which is become my crime, and thou the accuser. Thus it shall befall him who to worth in women overtrusting lets her will rule. All right. That's what happens when a man trusts a woman. A restraint she will not brook, and left to herself, if evil hence ensue, she first his weak indulgence will accuse. Thus they in mutual accusation spent the fruitless hours, but neither self-condemning, and of their vain contest appeared no end. All right, so they are each, now we end Book 9, they are each blaming one another, but neither is accepting any personal blame. And it appears that their vain contest will have no end. And that is the end of Book 9.